This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show, and indeed not pre-recorded, live today. Matt and Patrick, Sven Sundgaard's going to join us talking some weather, bring me the news, weather guy extraordinaire, Sven joining us at 5:30 or so. So Patrick, I had a funny story. I had an interesting Monday night. Now, Patrick, how much of what happened on the hip surgery did you hear about?
I heard about that it was postponed. I heard there was something...
Another health issue.
Yes. Okay. I heard about that.
So, and that was Friday. And then I got to sweat out the weekend, delightful, wondering what the mystery ailment was. Anyway, on Monday, I finally got in touch with my doctor who got me a prescription. But when I got home, I did the radio show on Monday evening on the Monday drive. And I got home and there was a message from my doctor who said, I want you to call this nurse hotline right now. Tell them what's going on, and they're going to give you some, you know, some marching orders. Okie doke. So I call up this nurse hotline. This is what, about on Monday evening at about 6:30. I just had posted the show, and I explain what's going on. But the third question, the nurse says, okay, stop. I want you to immediately go to the ER, and they're going to check you out right now. Okie doke. So... on Monday night, I went over to Methodist ER. I finally got seen at about 1:40 in the morning. That was a long night. I finally got seen at 1:40 in the morning. Then they admitted me, and I don't want to necessarily get into what exactly they had figured out. It was serious. It was it life threatening? Well, if not dealt with, yeah, definitely. I'm not going to pull punches. If this hadn't been dealt with, yes, this is indeed life-threatening, and 100%. But they figured out what the problem is, and I stayed for two delightful days over at Methodist. I want to say hi to Dr. Moore and Dr. Daladin over there. Fantastic guys who was nice to work with them. And, of course, the fantastic nursing staff over there, including... let's see, if Jenna and Taylor and Emily and many others, thank you very much for all the help that you gave me. I appreciate that. And as once again, I'm going to go back to what I said on Monday. The problem with our medical system today is not the doctors, the nurses, and the entire staff that works in these facilities. It's the bureaucracy that has taken the streamline effect and turned it into a profit model. And I think that you have to be careful with that. That it's not the doctors and the nurses. I mean, they're trying to do the best that they can, and it's very clear. And I said that on Monday, and I'll say that again today, especially after spending 2 days in there, including watching the Star Wars movies on March the 4th, which was funny because that was on Tuesday morning. So I finally get to sleep at like 4:30 in the morning. I sleep for like 2 hours. I'm getting admitted into the hospital. I said, okay, fine. Let me turn on the TV. And I turn on the TV. I turn on TBS, which is doing the Star Wars movies for May the 4th. And the first thing I hear, I swear to God, the first thing I hear is, now this is pod racing. I'm like, nope, not watching that. No, get me to the point where Obi-Wan and Anakin are fighting on a lava, you know, in a lava planet. I don't need the rest of it. Sure, the Darth Maul fight scene's pretty good, but sweet Jesus, the soap opera that's number two. Dear God, ugh.
I may be in the hospital, but I'm well enough to not watch this.
I don't want to get sicker. I did, of course, watch Empire Strikes Back, and I watched... it still is amazing how good that movie is. I mean, it's just, and it's the only one that Lucas didn't direct, and it is far superior than the rest of the entire franchise owes its, you know, really that its longevity, I think, to Empire Strikes Back. I mean, that movie is so good. It's a top three movie all time, really. I mean, it is so good. Oh, unbelievable. And that was very enjoyable. Then I got to see it dance in Ewoks, and that was okay. Like I said, I'm sick, but needless to say, got through things. And I imagine as you hear me talking here, most of the nurses were glad to see me go at this point. Okay, I don't need to talk more. Okay, Doctor Who. Okay, great, Matt. Thanks. I got discharged yesterday. I'm working on some things, got some prescriptions, got some things, working on things. A lot of people have actually sent some very nice words. Thank you very much. I do appreciate the kind comments that you have sent me and the encouragement and the support. That's been very nice. And I'm very grateful. I'm fine. Hopefully we're done with this. I got a few more checkups, but then I can get my hip surgery, and then I can really be drugged out of my mind. Those will be some great shows. That's going to be Carly coming up here in June. FYI. 952-946-6205. So let's start off with the lead today, which is all COVID-19 restrictions on businesses will be lifted completely by May 28th with the face mask mandate following by July. This is announced by Governor Tim Walz today. The governor will confirm the three phase at a noon press conference with looser restrictions on outdoor and indoor gatherings starting as soon as Friday before all COVID restrictions on businesses are brought to an end on May 28th before the Memorial Day weekend. That will be followed July 1st with the end of the face mask mandate, which could happen sooner if Minnesota achieves 70% of adults vaccinated, which is good news there. This will not mean that private businesses can't require face masks for entry. Here's the timeline. On noon May 7th, which I believe would be tomorrow, removal of limits on outdoor dining events and other get-togethers and ends the mask requirement outdoors except at large venues with over 500 people. This could see full capacity return, for example, Twins and Minnesota United games. The 11 p.m. mandatory closing times for bars, restaurants, and other food, drink, and businesses will also come to an end. So, so basically, you know, if you want to see some really crappy soccer and baseball, well, have we got a treat for you. Why do I get the impression you can open up all those seats at the Target Field? You ain't going to get many more seats in there. God, that team is bad. They lost again today. God, they're bad. They lost again today in the 10th inning. They start the inning with a guy on second, and they can't get him around. All you have to do is sack fly, done. And you get a run. Can't do it. They can't do it. They could start that guy 5 feet from home plate with his foot ready to touch the plate, and they couldn't get him done. That's just, Anyway, so good seats still available. For Twins and Minnesota United. And by the way, Minnesota United, what the hell's up with you guys? I mean, is Seattle really that much in your guys' noggin? Well, apparently so. May 28th, remaining capacity and distancing limits will come to an end, including for indoor events and gatherings. The only requirements that remain to be face mask requirements for indoor and outdoor events with more than 500 people. So basically, that would mean to me you could have a concert. And just, you know, if it's going to be more than 500 people at, like, First Avenue, well, you can have a face mask. July 1st or sooner, if Minnesota hits 70% of adults vaccinated, the remaining face mask mandate ends, as does the requirement for business to have COVID preparedness plans. Local government cities can implement their own face mask mandates if they wish, as can private businesses. At the current rate of vaccination, At the current rate of vaccinations, Minnesota could reach 70% of adults vaccinated by June 6th, though this might be pushed back by as rates are slowing. What isn't changing, Wall says the safe learning plan for schools will continue through the end of the school year as children are not eligible for the vaccine. But that's pretty much till the end of May, beginning of June anyway. So also staying in place is the eviction moratorium, the ban on price gouging and eligibility exemptions for state services. We can safety net our path out and back to normal. The release says the state will continue its emergency efforts as it continues its testing and vaccine efforts on the growth of new COVID variants, but it does not mention that it will happen with the governor's emergency powers. Our nation-leading vaccination effort has put us in the strong position of safely transition towards life as we used to know it, said Governor Walz. The pandemic is not over, and we have to work to do. But from the state fairgrounds to doctor's offices, the retrofitted Metro Transit buses that deliver vaccines where they are most needed, Minnesotans now have opportunities to get vaccine when and where they want to, which is indeed a good thing. As cases recede, more people get vaccinated every day. The vaccines are readily available and all who want it, and we can confidently and safely set our path back to normal. Capacity restrictions on businesses, including restaurants and bars, have been in place since the very first stay-at-home order in mid-March of 2020. Though since then, restrictions have been gradually loosened to allow more people indoors, except when the mandatory shutdowns in November and December, as Minnesota experienced the worst peak of the virus. Thanks, Republicans. Since the start of the pandemic, 7,191 Minnesotans have died, and with thousands more being hospitalized by the deadly virus. I will mention my favorite line from the presser today. Governor Walz talking to the reporters. I think the politicalization of masks will go down in history as one of the worst things that ever happened to this country. It cost us lives. The politicizing of masks will go down in history as one of the worst things that ever happened to this country. It cost us lives. And I want to be very clear here in regards to what Republicans are trying to do when it comes to Trump and vaccines, because they're still claiming, and the mentality of a lot of Republicans is that when this crisis happened, Dr. Donald threw on a lab coat and his Groucho Marx, surgical light. How about that? What do you know? People are dying to see me. Aha. There you go. And he heads into the laboratory to start pouring vials into each other and looking at, look at me, I'm making a vaccine. What Trump did do, and I don't know if Trump, and I'm going to be dead serious when I say this, I don't know if Trump has the mental capacity to understand what he did. He bragged about passing a stroke victim's test, for God's sakes. But what his administration did is definitely get rid of some of the red tape that was in place on vaccines that were already being developed, because the COVID, there were working on versions of this vaccine prior to this pandemic, not for the COVID-19 itself, but for similar strains. And what this did is, as they were able to ramp that up and they were able to get rid of regulatory hurdles that were in their way, they were able to get a product to market at a much faster basis. But at the same time, did you hear that, everyone? The Trump administration did indeed get rid of some regulations that did indeed speed up the development and the ability to distribute the vaccinations. But Donald Trump also did the most to use the pandemic to hide his incompetency on every other thing by trying to convince and successfully convincing idiots that known science, because when we go in for surgery, they wear face masks. You know why? Because you don't want doctors breathing into open wounds. It's safety. You know that, right? Well, we know face masks work. As a matter of fact, we have even more irrefutable evidence. We had, because so many people were wearing face masks this last fall and winter, we had one of the least violent regular flu seasons as we've ever had. There was not much in the way of flu because people were being careful. But Donald Trump vilified masks, vilified the vaccine. He himself vilified the vaccine. He talked about ingesting bleach. He talked about jamming light bulbs up your keister. For goodness sakes, he was a constant source of misinformation. When he even himself got sick, he hid and basically got juiced up like some sort of test dummy, for God's sakes. Demanded that they did not give out any reasonable explanation in regards to what was really happening with him. He when he got vaccinated, he did it in private because he didn't want people to know he was getting vaccinated. The vaccines that were delivered before he left office seem to have been routed specifically to very certain areas of this country where there were high Republican voter turnouts. And to wealthy people and to corporations. There definitely seems to be some questions on where in the world these vaccines went while Trump was in office. And a reminder, Trump's own Health and Human Services Department and CDC admitted to Biden that they did not have any plan for further vaccines to be delivered when Biden took office. And they had no infrastructure to give vaccines to the American people in all groups, not just wealthy white Republicans in Florida, but to all people in the country. And he had no infrastructure in place, no system in place to deliver that anyway. He got rid of some regulations, but he was a catastrophic failure when it came to leadership in the time of COVID. And one of the reasons why Joe Biden looks so good nowadays is because he basically just said, I got to save the American people. Not who donated to the Democrats. Get this into liberal Massachusetts or liberal Twin Cities. No, he said, we got to vaccinate everyone. Get this to every part of the country. Get this to every clinic. Get this everywhere immediately. The real credit here belongs to the scientists who developed this. And God save them, people like Dr. Fauci, who had to deal with a year of absolute incompetence before finally having a president that gave them the ability to try to save the American people. Donald Trump deserves a smidge of credit, but he also deserves a massive mountain of criticism. Never forget that. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. More on the coronavirus update. And then a story I've got to revisit from early this week. And actually, it's something we've been talking about for a while now about the bell and the wheel at the Minnetonka High School. I got to get to that when we do return as well. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Minnesota is reporting 1,661 new coronavirus cases, 13 more deaths linked to COVID-19. The State Department of Health announced on Thursday. Now I'm going to stop for a quick second. All right, I've been watching these numbers pretty intently now for, last year and a half now? Well, year and a few months. And I'm going to presume that the Minnesota Department of Health and Health and Human Services has given, and the smart leaders of the medical community have given Walls enough of a heads up, because when I look and I say on the day he announces, yeah, we're reopening everything, 1,661 new coronavirus cases, 13 more deaths. That's a little, that raises a red flag for me. All right. I mean, are we really ready at this point? With the latest numbers, the 7-day rolling average for new cases is down about 1,470 according to the Star Tribune's coronavirus tracker. Now, once again, that's for the 7-day, which means basically it's down about 200 cases per day, a little more. The reading continues the trend that over the past 3 weeks of declining 7-day averages after a steady increase of infections during March and early April. The state saw the rise of COVID-19 cases this spring coincided with the spread of more contagious form of the virus. The statewide tally of people who have received at least one vaccine dose increased by 15,448 in the last data released to more than 2.6 million people so far. That's about 59% of residents aged 16 and older, according to the state dashboard reading on Thursday. So we're only 11% away, well, and that's one dose, at least one dose, but we're only 11% away from that 70% that Walls was talking about. So maybe that's why, kind of why he's feeling optimistic here at this point. The pace of immunizations has slowed significantly over the past month, though, according to the Star Tribune. Whereas the seven-day rolling average of people in Minnesota receiving their first dose of the vaccine peaked at about 40,000 in early April, it's since fallen to about 16,000 per day earlier this week. The daily count for second doses administered isn't down as much, although the numbers have leveled off somewhat. Reminder, if you got the first shot, get that second shot. You need to do that. If it's Moderna or a Pfizer, get that second shot. That's what you need. I had the Pfizer. I got my second shot done. Residents of long-term care or assisted facilities accounted for two of the 13 newly announced deaths. Since Minnesota started detecting virus infections on March 2020, the state has reported 584,227 positive cases, 30,783 hospitalizations, and 7,204 deaths.
Wow.
There's a lot of people that in the next year who were screaming, let them play, or where's my chicken wings, or I want to go shopping. I want to go on a vacay. These people, we should just put up signs everywhere. We probably should. That, you know, with those numbers, 584,227 cases, 30,783 hospitalizations, 7,204 deaths. And I'm sure most conservatives will say, those numbers are lies. Five people are sick. That was that. And that's kind of how they are, because they're broken people. They just are. But I think we should put those signs around and make these people, these selfish, greedy jackasses, have to look at that every day for the rest of their life. That their kid's JV softball game versus Coon Rapids was more important than those people dying. It was. And I know there, well, no, I never said that. Yeah, you did. Yeah, you did. When you were being told the truth, when you were being told the reality, and you still demanded that your kid's sports get played. And every time, by the way, every time we conceded to you guys, things went horribly wrong. We'll do it safe. We'll be safe. Let us play. Okay, let him do it. We're not safe at all. Ha, ha, ha. The heck with Governor Walls. All the people get sick. Oh, gosh. I didn't realize it was going to be this bad. Just, I mean, it's predictable, isn't it? The share of positive tests coming back has been trending down, but it's still above the caution levels. It's at 5.9%, so it's still down. It's down since the last time we talked about it. The Star Vigilance coronavirus tracker shows 92 new hospital administrations reported on Thursday. That number is actually down dramatically. Daily announcements of new admissions typically include patients who have entered the hospital at some point of the last several days. While the number of COVID-19 patients in Minnesota hospital beds has been steadily increasing since March, some hospital indicators are now showing signs of leveling off. Numbers released on Thursday show healthcare workers have accounted for 41,754 positive cases, more than 563,000 people. 563,000 people who are infected no longer need to be isolated. The latest new health department figures show more than 4.4 million vaccine doses administered overall. And most patients with COVID-19 don't need to be hospitalized. And most mild illnesses involve mild or moderate symptoms. Patrick, to your knowledge, and I might have missed this, and I was kind of preoccupied this week. Have they announced? I know that they were starting to talk rumbling a little bit about whether or not kids were going to start getting, they're going to start opening up the vaccines for the kids. Did you hear anything about that?
I have heard that Pfizer, they might open that. I think they said it was, I can't remember if it was 12 or 13, but it was specifically Pfizer.
Okay. Well, I'm all for it. Get the kids vaccinated too. And then we really can kind of start moving ahead with this. So 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. When we do return, the story of the bell and the wheel, how it come to an end, but at the same time, how this story, oh, dear God, there's just an ugly, there's a few ugly elements to the story we'll have to touch on when we do return. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. Sven Sundgaard joins us. We'll talk weather with him coming up here in just a little bit. But Patrick, you have heard me talk about the Bell and the Wheel before, that from the from two different ships. The armored cruiser USS Minneapolis, that had the Bell. The battleship, the USS Minnesota, that had the Wheel. You've heard me talking about that. They disappeared from a military war memorial out on Bademecoska a few years back, right?
Yep.
And you had heard me talk about how they were over at Minnetonka High School, right?
Yep.
All right. This is a story we've been following for a while because there's a few different reasons. Most of all, I'm a veteran. I'm not a Navy veteran. Hi, Navy guys. I'm an Army guy. We like the land. Anywho, you can do that. If your armed forces, if you've served, you can kind of poke at everyone, you know, just make sure that if you're going to poke at the Marines, just make sure they know who they are, you know. Be careful, guys. Don't want to startle you. Sorry. See, we can do that. That's military branch of stuff. I know. I love you guys. Marines are rock solid. Navy, you guys, you guys are badass, man. Air Force, yeah. Anyway, go Army. Go Army. Army's a great choice. Anyway, but I've talked. I'm a veteran. You need to respect veteran memorials because you there's a lot of things that we can disagree with in regards to right and wrong. But a simple memorial honoring the people that served on the USS Minneapolis, USS Minnesota, and the USS Minneapolis. You know, the idea that you go out there and you can go out there and see these are military artifacts. They're good things to have. Now, I will say this. I mean, clearly there are a lot of times we should, you know, I actually think we should make sure we remember even the bad stuff. The way that the U.S. military treated the Native American peoples, by all means, the Tuskegee experiment, for God's sakes. I mean, we have it doesn't mean we're a lesser country by basically, you know, acknowledging the faults of our past. It means that we are big enough to realize, man, we've made mistakes, too, and we can be a better place. That's the important part. But needless to say, that's what the ship and Bell were. They're out there on Bademecoska. And somehow they got to Minnetonka High School. And there was a lot of question on how they got to Minnetonka High School. And there was one story, I think it was from the City Pages when they were still around from last year, which said that there was that someone at the Legion had just gotten mad that those people were around, that was a memorial around those people. I can't remember the story but it kind of let us think, okay, so you're upset that the memorial was out on Bademecoska because of what? Liberals? Democrats? Minorities? The LGBTQ community? What bothered you so much that the memorial was there? Once again, I'm going to read from this story here, and I want to make sure I get to the end here because they bury the lead. And I'm going to take a stop here a little bit through this story here because I want to scream at Minnetonka High School. Minnetonka Public Schools, the disputed owner, they're not the disputed owner, of the ships Bell and Wheel that were taken from Minneapolis War Memorial under mysterious circumstances, has agreed to return the artifacts to the Minneapolis Park Board. As the ship's Bell and Wheel were given into our care by the American Legion, it is appropriate that if the Legion was to make the determination of where it should be kept, then we respect that decision. The school district spokesman, Jackie Getty, said in a statement, "It has been our honor to maintain and enhance the naval items during the years that the Legion asked us to provide full supervision of the artifacts." Now, what you are going to learn here in this story is the American Legion was not behind this, but one individual who is using his membership in the American Legion as cover. So that aside, this wasn't some grand ploy by the American Legion, like, well, this is what we're going to do. And I'll get to that in a second. But can I just bring up this crap-ass attitude from the Minnetonka schools that you have the audacity to suggest that you somehow enhanced this Bell and Wheel? that the sacrifice of the USS Minnesota and the sacrifice of the USS Minneapolis were not enough for it. That the fact that your jocks were smacking the bell whenever they got a new record on their quad lift is somehow enhanced the bell. No! This is once again the mentality of people that have not had the guts to put on a helmet and strap on the weapon and fight for this country. The people that sit there and cradled in the comfort and safety that the military provides these people to actually think, well, I polished it, so we enhanced it. Shut up! No, in 50 years, no one is going to be looking at the bell and wheel, or no one's going to be looking at them and saying, oh, you know, sure, they came from the USS Minnesota and the USS Minneapolis, but do you remember that time they were at Minnetonka High School? What an honor! Shut up! You are a freaking public school! Stop acting like you are something better than that! You pathetic mules! God, that makes me mad. As a veteran, we enhanced the naval. You didn't do squat. You Switzerland them. So shut up. God, you arrogant jackasses. Now, that being said, let me continue on with the rest of the story. The wheel for the battleship USS Minnesota went missing from 1975 from Navy Rock. The memorial honoring Minneapolis sailor dead at Bede-Makaska, the bell from the armored cruiser, disappeared in 2014. The Southwest Journal tracked both of the Minnetonka High School last spring. The nautical-themed high school, whose mascot is the Skipper, had hung the wheel in its atrium. The bell had been stored in the weight room and used as a game day prop. Now, reminder, they enhanced the naval item. Wow. Wow, you... As the school came under increasing criticism, the bell was moved to a more distinguished place in the student commons. Nevertheless, Minnetonka Superintendent Dennis Peterson refused to give up the artifacts, challenging the park board's ability to properly care for them, a.k.a. Switzerland. Anyway, early this year, the Minneapolis Park Board renewed demands for the return of the bell and wheel, with Commissioner Brad Bourne threatening to send park police to seize them. State legislators urged Peterson to come to the negotiating table. The United States Navy formally divested its claim over the bell and wheel, refusing to become entangled in the local power struggle. And reminder, I think it was Minnetonka High School had asked the Navy to side with them, and the Navy's like, ah, leave us out of this. The end of the conflict is sight. The Park Board has now struck a deal with Minneapolis Post 1 and the American Legion, which Legion will work with Minnetonka Public Schools to return the artifacts by September 1st. The reconciliatory resolution, which the Park Board will vote on during its regular meeting on Wednesday, thanks Minnetonka Public Schools for refurbishing the bell and wheel. The Park Board promises to provide surveillance for the artifacts to ensure they're not vandalized or stolen again, and to create a process for the Legion to monitor the continued care. Mind you, the term stolen again is going to come back on us. Minnetonka Public Schools stated it will abide by that agreement. So, I'm going to read these last, like I said, this is Susan Dew, and I love Susan. She's fantastic. I will say this, to a point, I think the lead has been buried. According to Joyce Rose, a past commander and historian of Minneapolis Post 1, from the American Legion, a couple of rogue legionnaires took the bell and wheel down from Navy Rock, apparently without permission from the Legion, the Navy, or the Park Board. One of those legionnaires, Richard Ward, entrusted the items to Minnetonka High School. A letter from Ward accompanying the bell was specifically addressed to Dave Nelson, the retired Minnetonka football coach. Ward and Nelson are brothers-in-law who came up with the idea of Minnetonka taking the bell and wheel after a chat at a family gathering, according to emails. Okay, so what did they just admit here? So, first of all, this idea that the Minnetonka High School is saying they are given into our care by the American Legion. The American Legion is very clear that they did not authorize this being, you know, moved. They didn't. This was not them. This was a rogue legionnaire, which, by the way, the American Legion is doing a hell of a lot to protect this guy. Because what I see here is a common thief. He stole them. And I don't care if he was an American Legion guy. He stole them. Let me ask you something. As we candy coat this, what do you think the American Legion would be like, or Minnetonka High School, or any of these people would be like, if someone like, oh, I don't know, George Floyd had stolen the bell and the wheel, or Dante Wright, or Philando Castile, or Jamar Clark? Would they be sitting there saying, well, they were just trying to protect it, and they were like this? Or would they be, livid? Would they be outraged? Would they be beside themselves saying, how dare you violate a military memorial? Of course they would. They would be outraged because there is nothing different from what this guy did to going over to Fort Snelling Historical Cemetery and start urinating on some of the headstones over there. You're violating the military trust. And you can put it out there as a rapscallion who's getting into wackiness. Screw that. This guy stole them. He went into a military war memorial and stole artifacts. Even if this guy was a white guy and stole this bell and this wheel and went up on, say, Antique Roadshow or something and tried to sell them off, I think people would be outraged. But because it's Richard Ward, Ricky, or Dick Ward, and his Dave Nelson, that these are somehow, they didn't really steal it. They just came up with creative storage. Screw that. And, if I may, Ward and Nelson are brothers-in-law who came up with the idea of Minnetonka taking the bell and wheel after a chat at a family gathering, according to emails uncovered in a data request by former Southwest Journal editor Zach Farber. Wait a second here. So I'm going to presume Ward had taken the wheel at this point. And these guys are sitting around a family get-together, barbecue, what it is. Were you having a few? Were you a little lit up? Let me tell you about why I can't stand those liberals in Minneapolis. Was that what was going on? I'm kind of wondering what happened here at this family barbecue, family get-together. And so the decision was made between these two thieves, or at least the one thief, Richard Ward, to basically to wash his criminal element by giving it to the high school. This is premeditated. It's premeditated theft. This is an open and shut freaking case. This is premeditated theft of military war memorials, for God's sakes. How is this jackass not in cuffs in a jail cell right now? How is the brother-in-law not in cuffs in a jail cell? How is that? If any one of us had done anything like this, we would be in jail right now because we were brash enough and horrible as human beings to violate a military war memorial. Go over to Veterans Park in Richfield and start prying off one of the plaques over there and taking that home for a souvenir, or going over and saying, you know what? These people in Richfield don't deserve this plaque, so I'm going to take it and I'm going to go give it to the Eden Prairie hockey team, and they can smack that every time they go on the ice as a good luck charm. She honoring it. This is unfreaking acceptable. And I get it. Minnesota Post 1, you seem to be doing everything in your power to fall on the sword for this thief. This thief, or as you call them, rogue legionnaire. He's a thief. And I haven't even gotten into what appears to be a pretty bad either racial or anti-Minneapolis element here. There's something going on here. Why did this guy think that the city of Minneapolis shouldn't have these war memorials? He needs to come out and explain this. As a matter of fact, I'm a veteran. I am so mad at this clown, this pathetic clown, that he would do something so bonehead and stupid. It's premeditated theft of a war memorial. How in the hell is he not being charged with a crime? Because if he was black, he'd be getting charged with a crime. If it was me or Patrick, he'd be getting charged with a crime. But, oh, it's Minnetonka football. Come on, man. Come on, man. Minnetonka football. Come on, man. You arrogant people. You want a prime example of the two different standards, two different worlds that exist in this country between white and black. Dante Wright is dead because of an air freshener and tabs on the back of his car. This guy, we have him dead to rights for premeditated theft of war memorials and a school who basically tried to become Switzerland and not give them back. And we're all talking about, you wacky clowns. You wacky clowns. You desecrated a military memorial. You all did. And you sure as hell did over at Minnetonka High School, and you didn't add anything to it. Stop it, you arrogant fools. And this guy, I need someone to explain to me why Richard Ward is not in cuffs. I don't care if he's 90. Arrest him. He stole this stuff. And the fact that he was working with Nelson, arrest him too, because he seems to have been in on it, because they hatched a plan. Yeah. Don't do this stuff. There's some things you do not mess with. Memorials, you do not mess with. You don't go to memorials and mess with them. Period. Wow. I read this story, and trust me when I said I'm hot. How are these people not arrested for theft? Because if they were black, they sure as hell would be. 952-946-6205. David, hold on. I'll get your call here in just a second. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Yeah, I'm on one of my committees at my church. Okay, I'm on one of my committees at my church. If I went and told you, oh, you can come take all the pews out of the church, you know, because I said so, would you say, well, you know, the church told us we could? No, of course not. But here's Minnetonka High School, so in the American, we were given to our care by the American Legion. No, you're given to the care by a guy who stole it. And the minute you found out, I mean, let me just say this, considering the story seems to imply that you guys knew exactly how these got to you. At least it implies that. At least it implies the football coach who was under your hire at that time seems to know exactly how it got into your hold. How in the world do you not say, whoa, 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 you took... I mean, that'd be like digging up a headstone from Fort Snelling Military Cemetery and just taking it over to a school and putting it at the 50-yard line as a good motivator for the kids. What are you doing? And like I said, I want those guys arrested. That's a theft. That's theft. It's premeditated theft, for God's sakes. David is in Bloomington. He's been holding for a while. Welcome on in, David.
Hey, Matt. I am a Navy veteran, and like you, I am pretty outraged with this situation. And I come at it from with a little bit of a special background, because I am a plank owner, which in the Navy has a very special connotation, in that plank owners are members of crews of Navy ships that bring a ship into commission in the Navy. The first crew to sail a new ship when it comes into the fleet. And when we went through commissioning, we stood for the commissioning ceremony, we were presented with a number of mementos of the namesake of our ship. And one of those was the ship's bell from the previous incarnation of our ship. And to my knowledge, that bell still remains with the ship to this day. And so to think that something like a ship's bell or a ship's wheel could be misused in this way is pretty disgusting.
Let me ask you, David, for a quick sec here. Let's imagine you had that bell that means so much to you, as it should, and thank you very much for your service, my friend. Let's say that bell was taken by, Woodbury High School. And I'm just going to pull Woodbury out. Nothing against you, Woodbury, but just to pull a high school out. Woodbury High School. And Woodbury High School had taken your bell, and initially it was being used for a stunt at football games and to commemorate when a jock got a new lift record at the school. How would you feel about that?
Well, let's put it this way. In the old Navy, we had a way of dealing with that, and it was called keel hauling.
I know the term.
Yep. And it was not very pleasant, and it ended up with the obvious end. But the fact that this apparently originally started with these things being in the care of the American Legion. I had never joined the American Legion. I was never interested in joining the VFW because I could not be a full-fledged member of the VFW because I had never served in a unit that served in a foreign war.
Yeah.
And I never was very interested in the American Legion because, to me, it was always a very political organization. So this thing just adds on to my distaste for the organization.
David, thank you once again for your service. Thank you very much for your input because, you know, that puts a face on this. That's not just a shiny little object that we can ring-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling because it's free chicken wings for the next hour. No, it's a military memorial to the battleship, the USS Minnesota, and to the armored cruiser, the USS Minneapolis. And the fact that you guys feel ownership when you find out how they got to you, and the fact that the Legion seems to be trying their hardest to cover this all up. I mean, this is theft. Like one listener said, this should be a tribunal. We'll take a break, hour two up next. Indeed, if you've got elocalminnesota.com, is a great place to go for Mother's Day. And by the way, Patrick, hey, that's right, it's Mother's Day this week. I've been just a little preoccupied this week.
Some of us were talking about that, though. We were thinking Mother's Day is usually in the middle of May, not the second weekend.
Is this the earliest it can be? I think it might be the earliest it can be.
Probably.
So, right around there. I don't think it can be earlier than this. Anyway, needless to say, there you go. It is. It's coming up this weekend. So make sure you take care of mom there if you're looking for a nice place for some food. Get some food to go. As a matter of fact, let's be honest. Got Sven Sundgaard coming in here talking in that 5:30 or so about weather. I'm going to believe, just judging from the flowering trees I'm seeing, you can find some of our parks, which are going to be just freaking spectacular right now. Get out there. Go and enjoy. Enjoy the pretty flowers and all that stuff. Get a nice little lunch. Great way to celebrate Mom's Day. EatLocalMinnesota.com. Find out which restaurants have the to-go-for option for you on a Mother's Day. 952-946-6205. All right, here's a god-awful story. We have this story pops up, though, every few years, and it blows my mind that people would be this heartless and cruel. A $2,500 reward is offered for information leading to who's responsible for fatally shooting two bald eagles in a remote area of northern Minnesota. Why would you shoot a bald eagle? Seriously, what's wrong with you? I mean, what's seriously mentally wrong with you? An anonymous tip sent by an officer with the State Department of Natural Resources to a spot on the Black Duck River near the town of Black Duck on April 23rd. The officer found the dead eagles and turned them over to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, which did a necropsy in hopes of learning about their circumstances of their deaths. Anyone with information about the incident is encouraging to call the Turn in the Poachers Hotline. The $2,500 reward being offered by the U.S. FWS for information that leads to the arrest and conviction of these cases. The agency spokesman said, agency spokeswoman Tina Shaw, there have been 67 eagle shootings from 2001 to 2018 in 8 states that make up the Wildlife Service's Midwest region. While bald eagles are no longer an endangered species, they're still protected by multiple federal laws And yeah, I'm kind of surprised this is an issue. The Federal Eagle Act prohibits anyone from taking possession or transporting any eagle or eagle parts, including nests, eggs, feathers. First of all, if you're going to try to go into an eagle's nest, good luck. You are about to get your ass kicked. Okay, eagles are not messing around. Oh man. But yeah, you know, they are one of the great of the many species of animal we are blessed to have here in the state of Minnesota, including the wolf. Let's remember that. Not only are these animals a symbol of America, not only are these animals sacred to the native peoples, but they're just freaking cool. You ever watch an eagle come on in? Here's my story. I don't think you've ever heard this one. I was up on O'Sullivan Lake in Canada. I was up on a fishing trip with my dad. So this is a Canadian eagle. I don't know if there's a difference. It was a bald eagle up in Canada. And we're going from O'Sullivan Lake to Figure Eight Lake, and we're in this channel, and I hook into a northern, just a little hammer handle that basically inhaled my lure. And we are out in the middle of nowhere, Canada, northern Canada. We are way up there. And as I'm working to get the lure out of the fish, all of a sudden there's a shadow that goes over my head. And I am like, what in the world? And I look up, and probably 10 feet above our head is an eagle, full wingspan, looking down at us saying, hey, what you got there? And my uncle, who was in the boat, who's since been passed, Uncle George, he was, Matt, get that fish out of this boat now. So I was a little less delicate the rest of the way. Chucked the northern out. It was not going to make it at that point anyway. The eagle went over, took a look at it, got on its wing, did a spin, went right down, grabbed it, flew off with the fish. It was amazing. We're talking with, you know, at most 20 feet away from us as the entire time it's happening. Just magnificent to watch. My dad, who was quiet the entire time, just had a big smile on his face, just enjoying watching, you know, that nature unfold in front of us. And as we're going back, we've met up with my brothers who are in the other boat, and they said, hey, did you see the eagle flying with the fish? And George goes, yeah, Matt fed him. Yeah, there you go. They're cool. Eagles are cool. I would not advise trying to feed one. That was not something I was, okay, talons, claws, you know. You're all right, let me get this out for you there. Would you like me anything else with your order, sir? Thank you. Don't mess with eagles. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Now, I want to bring up another story that broke this week. I got to tell you the truth. There are some levels of stupid, and the question is we're getting into this negotiation time in regards to Republicans and, you know, these budget negotiations. Is it the Democrats' responsibility to basically save Republicans from themselves? It's not. It absolutely is not. And I am flabbergasted at the brazenness of these first salvos from the Republican Party, which basically come down to everything that we've passed, you have to pass or nothing get passed. Oh, and by the way, we'll let you, the one concession we'll give you is a half an egg salad sandwich from the Capitol commissary, and that's it. So you have to pass voter ID. You have to basically make Democrats illegal in the state, that sort of thing. You have to, give all the districts to outstate Minnesota, Minneapolis, St. Paul, or one district, and that's just, it's that sort of thing. Just outrageous arguments that they put forward that are to basically as their opening salvo. And the concept is this: make your first option, your first offer so horrific, so bad that anything is, you could, well, I'm moving towards the middle. Well, no, you're not. Your first offer is so outrageously boneheaded and partisan that there, you can move a hell of a lot. You could concede a lot and you still wouldn't really even be in negotiation territory. This brings us to the story of Senator Ingebrigtsen. That's right. Bill Ingebrigtsen. This is a story from earlier this week, but there's an update on it. This one from Blue Stem Prairie. I'll get to that in a second. But here, let me recap the story from earlier this week. Minnesota State's park could shut down in July if the Walz administration does not bow to demands by Senate Republicans to drop plans for a new clean cars emissions standard. Along with parks, much of the environmental arm of the state government would shut down over the impasse, which flared up during a conference committee meeting Tuesday in the Senate proposed omnibus environmental budget. If passed, the Senate version of the omnibus environmental bill would slash tens of millions of dollars for environmental funding on a variety of projects, from combating chronic wasting disease in deer and the decline of pollinators to cleaning up forever chemicals in water supplies. Senator Bill Ingebrigtsen, jackass from Alexandria, told the committee it is the only budget he will consider and that he will not pass anything unless all Minnesota Pollution Control Agency rulemaking on clean cars is stopped. So basically, he is throwing a little pity party for himself, that he wants the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency to basically not be able to make any rules towards clean cars, or else he'll completely and totally sabotage the entire budget for the environmental budget, the omnibus environmental budget. So that's, it's just pathetic. It is just pathetic, especially, I mean, and if there's a sign that they know that they can't stop this, it's this. Ingebrigtsen went on to say, this is once again from the story earlier this week, "We are an outlier. We are the only ones in the Midwest that's moving forward with this. It's very maddening." We're not an outlier. It's just, we might be the only ones in the Midwest, but there are a lot of states that are moving forward with clean car rule emissions. He and Representative Josh Heintzman, a Republican from Nisswa, accused the MPCA of being unwilling to compromise on the controversial emission cutting program. Well, since they don't report to you, they don't have to be. "The agency will have brought it to the legislature," Ingebrigtsen said. "The new rule, similar to the one in California and more than a dozen other states, aims to help drive down heat-trapping greenhouse gas emissions from the transportation by requiring automakers to increase deliveries of electric vehicles to Minnesota for sale. DFL Governor Tim Walz directed the MPCA to develop the rule as part of an emphasis on addressing climate change and the need to cut global warming gases. Representative Rick Hansen, DFL from South St. Paul, reiterated the ultimatum for clarity. So this is a very important part here. I want to make sure you all hear this. Rick Hansen, the DFL from South St. Paul, asked, "So if there's not a repeal of the authority for the clean car rulemaking coming out of this conference committee, then the budgets of the BWSR, the Minnesota Board of Water, Soil, and Resources, the Minnesota Zoo, the LCCR, the Legislative Citizen Commission on Minnesota Resources, the Conservation Corps, the Science Museum, the MPCA, and the DNR will not happen unless we accede to the Senate position. Is that correct, Senator Ingebrigtsen?" "That's exactly correct," Ingebrigtsen replied. "I think we can move forward, but it's going to have to be with that understanding." The hardline moves comes just days before the state administrative law judge is set to issue a decision on whether to adopt Minnesota's clean car rule. So basically, he was asked on point, "You're saying that unless we get rid of clean car standards in Minnesota and make it to where only the legislature can pass clean car standards, that basically you will sabotage the budgets of all these other departments," which is just stupid. And if I might just take a quick second away from that main point, I was just out in two of our state parks, Lake Rebecca and Sakata Lake down in Waterville. And I talked about going down to Waterville, not exactly liberal haven. And I was at the Casey's General Store in that town. We drove into town to get some gas, get some snacks. Woman there working, she's like, big smile on her face. "Oh yeah, the park brings in a lot of people into Waterville. We love having the park here." And I said, because I think I walked up and said, "That's a great park over there." She goes, "Oh, it's wonderful. We brings in a lot of people. We make a lot of sales. It's great." That is not you're not hurting people in North Minneapolis, Ingebrigtsen. You are hurting your own constituents, as the vast majority of these state parks are in rural Republican areas, which need that added revenue to bring someone into town during the summer. And you're threatening to get rid of that as well as all the other things, including the Minnesota Zoo. Because once again, I think it's like, we're going to hurt the liberals by shutting down the zoo. We're going to hurt the liberals by going after the science museum. You're going to hurt yourselves a heck of a lot more. And as someone pointed out to me today, and I want to make sure I see this correctly. I want to make sure I quote this this tweet from earlier today correctly. The pardon me as I shuffle through my briefs. Dun, 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 dun. All right. And what basically the point that they were making was this, that here it is. If it's wrong to close, it is wrong to close state parks and slash funding for All Research Minnesota and Minnesota DNR, Minnesota Zoo, Explore Minnesota in opposition to a narrow issue arena. But here, the math is bad. Outdoor recreation creates $17 billion in Minnesota. Auto sales only get $14 billion in Minnesota. So to save clean car rules, to get rid of all the clean car rules, which is a much smaller industry than outdoor recreation in Minnesota, you're going to jeopardize a much more important industry in Minnesota. Just ignorance. Well, Engelbrightson has struck again, and you can tell by the complete lack of intelligence. In the beginning of a Thursday Environmental and Natural Resources Conference Committee, we witnessed a remarkable bit of melodrama. After Minnesota House Environmental Committee Chair Rick Hansen called the meeting to order, his state senator counterpart Bill Engelbrightson, jackass from Alexandria, made a statement about how ill-treated he had been in Tuesday's meeting of the conference committee, how he'd never say he'd shut down agencies if he didn't get his way on clean car standards, made an offer, then said there is no point in talking about the LCCMR provisions in the House bill, then logged off, taking his members and going home. Now, he is saying he never said, and I'm going to, this is the exact quote from the meeting. He says, I never intended this to be an ultimatum. Rick Hansen, this is from the earlier story, Rick Hansen, DFLer from South St. Paul. So if there's not a repeal of the authority of the clean car rulemaking coming out of this committee, conference committee, then the budgets for the BWSR, the Minnesota Zoo, the LCCR, the Conservation Corps, the Science Museum, the MPCA, and the DNR will not happen unless we accede to the Senate position. Is that correct, Senator Engelbrightson? That's exactly correct, Engelbrightson replied. So now he's just lying. Now he's just a lying sack of crap. So that's all that Engelbrightson is. Going back to the Bluestem Prairie story from today, who knows what happened to Wednesday's meeting for which Engelbrightson was supposed to hold the gavel. He would have thought that would be a prime opportunity for a public tantrum, but then Engelbrightson would have to take responsibility for it. On Twitter Wednesday, Hansen observed the Senate has the gavel meeting wasn't happening. So basically, what had happened was Engelbrightson was supposed to have the gavel for the meeting on Wednesday. It didn't happen. And by the way, it sounds like Engelbrightson decided instead to go to a local community college for a service to honor the community college's law enforcement graduates, not the nursing graduates, mind you, law enforcement. And apparently there are free subs and sandwiches. Sounds like it was a catered affair. And that was more important than the conference committee on his own conference, which he is leading. Dude, your priorities are screwed up too. That's the rumor I heard. I don't know. I'm looking for confirmation on whether that's true, that he was at a community college for an unscheduled event to pander to police graduates, not the nursing graduates of the community college, but the police graduates of the community college. But there were some free grub, so yum, yum. It's on the Wednesday when the meeting that Engelbrightson was supposed to lead was supposed to happen. The Senate GOP was the chair of committee. This is a tweet from Rick Hansen. No meeting scheduled. The House is ready to work. But basically, Engelbrightson just didn't show up. So he showed up on the day Hansen was leading it so he could throw out, I have been so mistreated because you heard what I said verbatim, jackass, and then stormed off like a little three-year-old girl who wanted to take her toys and go home. Oh, Bill Engelbrightson, you're such a coward. Instead, the former Douglas County Sheriff decided he used Hansen's moment to blame everything on DFL framing. He has now put a new offer on the table. And this is not really, like I said, this is when I was saying before, don't take their first offer because they're usually they're bad. Their second offers are usually pretty bad too. Vehicle emissions standards report appeal. They're going to replace that with a 2-year moratorium in adopting vehicle emission standards. Basically saying he's trying to get that 2-year thing because their hope is that they can win the election in 2022 and then they don't have to worry about this. But the reality is I don't know if they're going to win in 2022. We'll have to see about that. But that's what this real goal is. They want to just postpone this and hope they can win the election. They accept the House agreement creating the outdoor engagement grant account, but they'll acknowledge it, but they will give it no money. That's not a compromise. You know, there's some other things in here. There you go. It's a prime example of how crappy politics can get because these guys on the right, they're every one of their arguments is going to be the extreme. Now, when I come back, I'm going to make an argument, a plea to the DFL when I do return. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Talked about that. When we come back, also Sven Sundgaard coming up as well. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. DFL, Rick Hansen. First of all, Rick Hansen, I like you. DFL from South St. Paul, I like him. Don't go with this 2-year moratorium on this. We need climate change rules in effect now. We need to start regulating these emissions yesterday. Don't cave. That is not a comp. He's not making a concession there. He made an outrageous claim, and now he's acting like, well, just put it on 2 years. Oh, I'm willing to compromise. No, he's not. That's not a compromise that should be in this bill. If they're stupid enough, if the Republican Party is stupid enough to shut down their the parks in most of their districts, then that's on them. And this is the problem. DFLers, listen to me. And I'm talking about to the Minnesota DFL and to the politicians. It is not your job to save Republicans from themselves. The Republicans are banking on you caring more for their constituents than they do. But to do that, you have to constantly give up your strong defense points. And that is no longer a viable option. If they're trying to hold themselves hostage, there's not much you should be willing to do to try to help them. And this idea that, a lot of people in their district are going to hurt. I understand that. But they elected these clowns. They elected these guys. And if that's who they elected, well, guess what? That's the representation they got. Because if you bail them out, they're going to say, see, we saved you. And they didn't. They used their own districts. And their communities. They use their constituents as a bargaining chip that they were willing to destroy. And yes, it sometimes takes having the guts to call their bluff. They are banking on you being better human beings than they are. Don't oblige to that. You already are better human beings because you're not throwing your constituents under the bus to try to get one or two concession points on a Republican wet dream list, for God's sakes. Just look at them and say, here, no, we're not going to regulate in any capacity. We're not going to delay them. We're not going to regulate them at all. The clean car rules, that's a separate thing. We're dealing with this budget. And if you guys want to walk out, that's on you. Because I can tell you what, the last thing these guys do want to do is go back to their districts and have to explain why they are the ones that shut down the parks. Because at that point, it becomes real. All of a sudden, that Casey's General Store that's in Waterville, all of a sudden, they don't have customers coming in because the local state park is closed. They don't care about clean car emissions. Most people actually want clean car emissions. Heck, you can't get an electric car hardly in this state. People want electric cars. Electric cars are a popular idea. Doesn't mean you're not going to be able to buy gas cars, but we just get more electric cars. But they, because you go on out there and you start hurting these communities, they're not going to care. They don't care about clean car emissions. They care about their bottom line. Stop trying to bail the Republicans out from themselves. They want to go out there and strike icebergs. Well, you can't really stop them. You can feel bad for them, but that's on them. Don't concede major points, which you should have, just to stop them from hurting their own people. And if you did that, maybe the next election, they wouldn't be such a freaking slam dunk in their district. You think about that? Because I can tell you right now, if I was in rural Minnesota and we have two state parks in our district and all of a sudden those state parks were closed for an extended period of time and we had a real major economic downturn right after the pandemic, I don't think I'd be too eager to listen to the Republican coming in the door who is proudly bragging about how they shut down the parks. Go out there, have a spine, fight. For God's sakes, fight. But don't feel it's your job to save the Republican Party from themselves. Ingebrigtsen is this stupid? Let them be stupid. You can't fix stupid or the people that voted for stupid. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Sven Sundgaard, when we do return, we'll talk some weather. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Sven Sundgaard is the weatherman extraordinaire for bringmethenews.com. He also has an exceptional YouTube channel, which you should be following. And he's kind enough today to join us to talk about some of the weather things going on. Hi, Sven.
Exceptional. Yes.
Okay.
Hello.
I'm good with, I can sell things. Yeah.
That's good.
Punch
it
up.
That'll help out.
No, well, you are fantastic, and you're a lot of fans here. Love listening to you. It's an interesting time. It's been a little bit cooler, but boy, you sure have seen the flowering trees, particularly, really have just gone to town.
Yeah, I mean, the nice thing about, I was just thinking about this today, is that the cool weather in May is totally different than cool weather in April. Like today, 63 degrees. Yeah, it's below normal, but the sun's out. This is doable. It's cool weather that you can be out in, not like, in April where we had a week in the 40s or 30s, 60-ish degrees with sun is, I think, almost idyllic weather for most people. So, yeah, it is below normal, but the fact that the sun is out makes a huge difference. That's what all those plants are keying in on. The temperature is almost irrelevant as long as it's far enough away from freezing, but the fact that we have sunshine with this outbreak of cool weather is a big difference. And you can see things explode this weekend. They're just waiting for some heat and sunshine finally, and then boom. Which, if you're an allergy sufferer, you can verify that.
I'm gonna head on out to the Arboretum this weekend. I'm gonna go see, because that strip they've got there with the flowering trees, when those are all in bloom, that's about one of the prettiest places you'll ever see.
Yeah, and tulips are blooming everywhere, and it's just, I love this time of year, because even if you're caught in a rut, the trend is upward. It's not like October when it starts to get cold. You're like, oh, here we go.
You had part of your latest weather, the 30-year climate trends came on out. People can see that. You did a nice breakdown of that on the video, but talk a little bit about this, because it is, once again, there is a definite rise once again in the 30-year climate trends, what we're seeing here for Minnesota as far as temperatures and water precipitation, right?
Yeah, one of the biggest standouts for us is precipitation. So we're warmer. The 30-year normals overall are warmer than the previous one. And so for a little background for people who maybe don't know, we use 30-year averages so that when you see or hear a meteorologist say, today was above normal or below normal, or if we're referring to summer, should be warmer than normal. We're talking about, when we say normal, we're talking about the 30-year average, which in theory gives us a snapshot of the current climate. So we're comparing it to normal of the current climate. If we want to look at the historical average, we're going to be above normal a lot more often, even more so than we are using the 30-year averages, because the historical average, of course, is even cooler than the 30-year averages. So we basically shifted from using 1981 to 2010 for the last decade, now to 1991 to 2020. So You know, we added a whole another decade of very warm temperatures overall, especially in the winter. So you should see usually subtle shifts because you're only changing, you know, a decade. But most of the country, which is just this has become the thing, has seen most of those months shift to warmer, and we're no exception. Now, the interesting thing in our 30-year normal shift is the north central part of the country, including us, is some of the lesser or the least amount of temperature change than, say, the West Coast and the East Coast has seen more significant warming. And part of that has been sort of these bizarre patterns we've been stuck in, like we saw late April, February, where we are getting outbreaks of cold that are very likely a result of wonky jet streams because of a rapidly warming Arctic. So there might be some temporary slowing of warming in parts of the year. So the only 2 months for us, in fact, that are cooler than the previous 30-year average were February and April. And I think a lot of people might kind of nod in agreement with that and say, yeah, it does seem like Februaries have been getting colder, or there have been some exceptionally cold Februaries. This last one, 2 weeks of cold brought down the averages, but also that Super Bowl February. You know, we've had a couple of them in the last decade that were really significantly below normal. And then some cold Aprils. April 2018 was the coldest April on record. This April was almost a wash. You know, we talked about this last week. April wasn't quite over, but it did end up 0.2 degrees above normal, which is crazy because it does tell you just how warm that first week of April was, that three cold weeks couldn't even undo it.
Mm-hmm. When you look at that, and by the way, I mean, when you say about cold, as a lot of older listeners will say, or normal, we had normal February, we had a normal, a normal April. But going back to the water precipitation, one of the things I found interesting about your map that you put out is that really it gets up to the Twin Cities, but really south of us, was it up to 2 inches more in water every year that they've been getting in kind of the Mankato area down in that direction?
Yeah, if you look at the Mankato area, that south central part of the state and some spots in southeastern Minnesota, up to, 2 to 2.5 inches more precip on an annual basis than the previous 30-year average. So remember how I just said that, you know, just adding a decade should be very subtle shifts. That's a huge amount of water just adding another decade. And that's indicative of these extreme rainfall events we've seen, which we've experienced here. But if you kind of think back, bigger picture, we have been seeing a lot of them in farm country, you know, really flooded fields, south central Minnesota, a lot of these 3, 4, 5, 6 inch rainfalls. And if you keep getting those repeatedly, even if it's just one or two a summer more, that's going to make a difference. And ours also, we're also up about 1 to 2 inches in precip from the previous 30-year normal, which is also a huge change considering you're just shifting it a decade. And when we compare to the historical average, so historically, when we look at 1873 to 2020, all the reliable records we have for the Twin Cities, it was about 28 inches annual precip. Now, that includes snowfall, which we measure to a liquid equivalent as well. But the new 30-year averages, let me see, I just figured this out, is about 31.5.
Wow.
So that, now, again, that's not a shift from the previous 30 years. That's looking at the historical average. You know, 1873 to 2020, the average was 28. But now our latest 30-year average is about 31.5 inches.
Wow.
Which is a shift, again, of about 1.5 inches from the previous 30 year. But when you look at the historical average, it's a bigger shift. Same thing with the temperature. We do want to kind of compare it to the historical average because that's the bigger change. So we are about 0.5 degrees warmer in the Twin Cities, the new 30-year normals from the previous, but the historical average is about 1.6 degrees warmer compared to the historical average.
My dad always used to say the Great Lakes were such an impact on the weather. And one of the things I also found to be interesting as a person that goes up to northern Minnesota a lot is that actually it looked like it was drier up in certain parts there. And I'm wondering how much are the Great Lakes kind of acting as a buffer zone there that's kind of knocking that moisture down before it gets too far north, and that we're starting to see more drier conditions in the northern part of the state?
I think it's difficult to try to draw any conclusions as to why there are. So yeah, if go back and watch my video, I showed a national map, which shows that everywhere but the south, the southwest is getting hotter and drier, which isn't really a news flash probably to most people.
It is, but the desert, I've heard.
but basically all of the central and eastern part of the country has gotten wetter. But yeah, I zoomed in on Minnesota, and really you have to look at that map to visualize it. There were pockets, as you mentioned, in northern Minnesota, and also I think in west central Minnesota of drier conditions compared to the 30-year average. But, you know, it's a relatively small area, so it's hard to say exactly what's going on there, because it's not part of a wider trend. Mm-hmm. So it could be the lakes. I probably would doubt that, but it's also an area that doesn't get – so I think what's really shifting our precip totals for much of the Midwest, and specifically here in the southern half of the state, is – the fact that we're getting those extreme precip events in the summer, those thunderstorm events, that's what's really pulling up the averages. In northern Minnesota just sees fewer thunderstorms, so I think that's why probably there is less of that shift. Mm-hmm. But there is a weird bullseye west of the Twin Cities, too, of about a half inch to 1 inch drier compared to the previous 30 normals. And that could be a data hiccup, too. It could mm-hmm. just be, you know, who knows?
See, this is why I trust you. This is why I talk to you, because you straighten me out on stuff.
But that's why it's important to look at the big picture for all of this. You know, what are the trends? What are the region-wide trends? Because you're going to have outliers in any piece of data.
Well, and I think this is the important thing, and this is one of the things you, I know, have always been an advocate for. If we don't start doing something here, I mean, every one of these times we have these new reports come on in, we have more bad news that the climate has indeed changed even further and to a more extreme. And yet, and as we talk about these years getting warmer, and you make the point about February and April getting colder, that means there are months later on they're getting a lot warmer. And so, you know, it is insanity to me that we still have the inability to get basic climate change regulations and standards put into place, because reality is you see it every day. This stuff is not fake. This is very real. And the longer we wait, the worse this gets.
Yeah, you know, I've told people I wish this were part of some crazy liberal conspiracy to control the world, and I would sleep better at night. You know, but it's really not. I mean, the changes. So as we mentioned, and to put it into perspective, yes, the February averages are 0.4 degrees cooler than the previous 30-year normal. April is 0.7 degrees cooler than the previous 30-year normal, but every other month is warmer than normal from the average. And 2 months of note, we should make note of, that are much warmer than the previous 30-year average. And again, I think this kind of clicks in our mind with what we've experienced in the last decade, September and December,
yep,
particularly.
Yep.
So we're seeing that shift of fall. September, 1.3 degrees warmer than the previous 30-year average. So just adding another decade. But December was the biggest shift of any month in our new 30-year averages. It's 2 degrees warmer than the previous 30-year average. So that means this last decade had a bunch of consecutively warm Decembers. And I think all but one were above normal. And that kind of, again, people have said before, it seems like winter's shifting. It's starting later and then not necessarily ending later, but we get these bizarre blasts of cold in February or April. And sure enough, that's being played out in the data. So it's fascinating to see kind of what we've been experiencing or our own impressions actually play out in the data. And, you know, while climate change is terrifying, we're learning a lot about how dynamic and how connected our climate and atmosphere are, so that, you know, as we've talked about before on your show and just today, even when we screw up that natural difference in temperature between the Arctic and mid latitudes where we are in the equator, you screw up the jet stream, you screw up patterns. So it's not just, oh, always nice and warm in Minnesota. You're making a place like this that's extreme more extreme.
And by the way, that December stuff, you and I have talked about this. December's broken. I mean, really, it is. I mean,
yeah, no, you can't. Don't plan any winter activity in December.
Yeah, or a white Christmas. I mean, we've actually had multiple years now where it's like, will we have snow? And I think, you know, it's is
always right up to the minute.
It is. It really is. Wow. So going back to this year, did that cold spell we had there in April, did that slow down the, you know, like I said, it seems like the flowering trees are much more back on schedule. Did the nature kind of get a little bit back into normal after that early warmth we had?
I think it got us closer. I think we still ended up, and I'm not a phenology expert, but I think we're still ahead of schedule just because it was so warm so early. And it wasn't just one or two warm days like we normally would get in that March, early April period, but it was a week of temperatures in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. I mean, that's a lot of warmth where the trees are like, oh, what did we miss our alarm? You know, so everything was exploding. And the fact that it was chilly, I know it was miserable, but we talked about this last week too, the fact that it was pretty chilly for a couple weeks there, and notably cloudy too, I think really did kind of put, all, not quite a pause, but I think plant growth was almost to zero during that period because, you know, leaves are solar panels. If the sun's not out, there's no incentive to be out. And if there isn't the warmth, of course, that's not going to trigger anything to grow much either. And that's saying something for our plants, which are built for cold and heat. But, you know, like we just said, I mean, you could tell this last weekend was all of a sudden a trigger light switch. Okay. Everything's just blown up.
And it is. And it looks like we're going to be close to 60s, in at least for the next few weeks. When do we start getting back into the 70s again?
I think by the end of next week or next weekend, the models agree on warming things up here. 70s, even maybe all three models have occasionally thrown out an 80 potentially at some point in the next Friday to Sunday period. So when you were talking about, what, the 15th to the 18th there. So, yeah, it'll be back. But meantime, it's this actually fairly pleasant kind of cool weather where we're going to hover around 60 the next few days. And like I said, with the sunshine, it's actually pretty nice. And next week we'll tick up into those low to mid 60s most days until we head into Thursday, Friday, when I think we'll get closer to 70. If we don't by Thursday, probably by Friday, closer to that 70. But the one thing we're going to be looking for is there's not a lot of precipitation. So it seemed kind of damp there in April. It's actually getting kind of dry right now. We've got a chance maybe of getting nicked by a system here Saturday night. But the consensus in the models is to keep that just to our southwest. Just the American model is kind of bringing in maybe a quarter of an inch of rainfall. So we do need it to warm up, not just because it's fun and pleasant, but this should be May and June are the peak of our severe weather season. And while that severe weather isn't fun, you know, our growing season, whether you're a farmer or your native species, relies on the precip that comes from thunderstorms. And so if it doesn't warm up and we don't get those dew points up, you know, we're cutting into that thunderstorm season.
Yeah, we got to get that there. I'm, though, one of those people. I'm a Minnesotan. 65 to 70, sunny skies, that's the best day. That's me. I know I'm crazy, but I like
it. It's hard to complain about that, yeah.
It really is. So, Sven Sundgaard, once again, find his weather forecast at bringmethenews.com. The YouTube page, I'll link to that as well. Make sure you're following him on YouTube. Sven, thank you very much, as always, my friend. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
Yeah, have a good weekend and happy Mother's Day to all the moms.
Indeed. Sven Sundgaard, kind enough to join us. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Thanks to Sven Sundgaard. Gosh, is he nice to have on the air with us. A lot of great information with him every time he comes by to visit. I wanted to end out today with a story. You are seeing these stories all over the place. I talked to you even about this a little bit on Monday. As it struggles to staff up ahead of its May 22nd opening, Valley Fair is boosting the starting pay for some positions to $15 an hour. The wage increase at the amusement park in Shakopee is for food and beverage workers who are at least 16 years old. The park also hires some 14 and 15-year-olds, but they are not allowed to handle some machinery such as fryers. it just sounds like a Simpsons episode. In recent weeks, Valley Fair had already bumped up the starting wage from $11.25 to $13.50 for food service workers, but executives decided they need to go even further to $15 to compete against other employers in the Twin Cities with a little more than 2 weeks until opening in Valley Fair. Valley Fair is still looking to hire about 300 people. Here's what I'm going to say. I think you are seeing a very important stance in America. And it's a stance that really scares the living daylights out of conservatives. and these far-right libertarians and stuff. And that is, people are not willing to just work crap jobs anymore. And it's one of those things where you want me to go work in a, you know, in a post-pandemic world where the, people are not going to be wearing face masks and people are not going to be social distancing, and you want me to expose myself to all that in the hot sun, making a lot of food, a lot of people in a fairly miserable job, and you want me to get, what was it, $11.25 an hour with limited, if any, benefits? Please. No. You need to step up your game. You want people to come work for you, $15 an hour, maybe some benefits. You know, caring for the employee. I think one of the things this pandemic really did expose is that not everywhere, and I do not want this following statement to be predicted, you know, kind of used as a painting with a wide brush. I don't. But there's a hell of a lot of places in America where they just do not care about their employees. They do not care. And we saw it over and over again at the beginning of this pandemic. So what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to pay a decent wage. Something that people don't have to work four freaking jobs and every day of the week, 12 hours every day, just to basically be able to live off of. You need to pay, and you need to have some sort of, you know, employee plan that's got some level of benefits or, you know, encouragement, bonuses, whatever the case may be. But, you know, I'm sorry. I mean, these people, the conservatives who are trying so desperately to, oh, these poor employers, they can't find anybody to go work for them for crap wages anymore. And I posted the story of the Montana guy, the Giafante, the governor out there. He basically is rescinding unemployment benefits in the state to basically make his employees' lives worse in an effort to get people into crap jobs. Think about that. That is insanity. That is absolute insanity. To go on out there, it's like, okay, I'm going to make their lives worse so that the crap job wages and the no benefits and all that stuff is something. That is, if there's anything that's the epitome of the modern Republican and why you should never trust a Republican with economics, it's that. Is that the mentality is, you got two choices. You could say, one, hey, pay your workers a livable wage and maybe get some benefits or bonuses or, you know, respect them a little bit. Or we can try to make everyone's existence god-awful horrible so that the crap sandwich job that you're trying to offer looks a little bit more tasty. Well, that's the Republicans. The Republicans are like, let's destroy everything. Let's get rid of all benefits. Let's get rid of all minimum wage. Let's get rid of this. And so the minimal jobs, they are great. And they're not great. They drive down your staff. And I think people are done with it. And I am very much encouraged that we are definitely starting to make a change here. And what it's taken is Generation Z. I'm Generation X, and then the millennials, then there's Generation Z. And one of the things I can tell you, because I got three kids who are in Gen Z, that generation is tired of our crap, and they are not taking it anymore. And whether it's, you know, fossil fuels, climate change, gun violence, livable wages, they've had enough.